You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. When the Pistons lost to the Celtics the other night, let's flash back to the final minute. The Pistons had just taken the lead. Reggie Jackson brings the ball up court, surveys the defense as dribbling at the top, and pulls up for a deep three-pointer. It missed. The Celtics rallied from there and ended up winning. That shot by Reggie Jackson has really turned into sort of a flashpoint for a lot of Pistons fans. A lot of people are mad about that shot, that he was too selfish, that he was just gunning. And it gets back to a lot of these deeper conversations we've had about Reggie Jackson. But I don't think it's fair to pinpoint this one shot. And neither does Stan Van Gundy. Van Gundy defended Reggie Jackson, said that was an okay shot. Basically called it a 50-50 shot. And Van Gundy has talked about, especially lately, how he's not one to critique his player shot selections. He's the son of a coach. And he says, my favorite quote about this was from Van Gundy earlier, talking about, yeah, my dad's watching games. He can't stand our shots. He's probably mad at me about it. But I, as Van Gundy, he basically said, that's his MO. He's going to give guys a little more freedom on their shots. Jackson took that freedom. It was not a bad shot. It was not a terrible shot, at least. It wasn't a good shot. There's no question about that. I think the Pistons should have worked for a better shot. But Jackson had some space. He could pull up. It's a shot he makes a lot of times. He was playing well during that game, shooting well. And, yeah, there are mixed things about the hot hand, and we can get deeper into the hot hand in a second. But it was a fine shot. If he makes it, nobody's talking about it. There would have been a little discussion of, hey, big shot by Reggie Jackson helping the Pistons win late. But there definitely would have been no outrage, no, oh, man, I can't believe he made such a terrible shot. There would have been nothing like that. It would have been a medium amount of positive talk and nothing else. This was not a no, potentially yes shot. It was a shot that people got upset because it missed. He had space. It was deep, yeah. It was a deep three, but he had space. The Celtics were playing off him in a way. He identified the defense correctly in that sense. Okay, here's the next step with it, though. Van Gundy defends it. Van Gundy also said that Reggie Jackson texted him the next day and said, yeah, I should have run a pick and roll there. That would have had a better chance of succeeding. And that's what you want to see. This was not the worst shot, but there could have been a better shot the way the Pistons offense was going, who was on the court, what the Celtics were doing. There could have been a better shot. It's good that Reggie Jackson understands that, acknowledges that. The Pistons need Reggie Jackson to be a better player. He's probably the highest variance guy on the roster right now as far as importance. Andre Drummond's the Pistons' best player. KCP is very good. Other guys like Marcus Morris, John Luer, Tobias Harris, they're important too. But Reggie Jackson can be so much better than he's been because we've seen what he's been this year and we saw what he was just last year. The Pistons need him to be more like he was last year. A better offensive player who makes good decisions, who's a scoring threat, who's a passing threat, who does an adequate job of balancing those. I'm not saying he's a great point guard, one of the top point guards in the game, but he can be pretty good. He was pretty good last year. The Pistons need him to get back to that. Maybe getting healthy, maybe that'll do most of it. Maybe he'll just take a fresh start next year. But that's not going to be everything. He needs to play smarter. And this was a step toward that. Not the shot, but his reaction. Understanding that he could have gotten something better by running the pick and roll. Maybe it would have been something for one of his teammates. And the acknowledgement that he didn't have to take the shot. There's this talk, founded, reasonable, justified talk about Reggie Jackson being a selfish offensive player. Shots like that feed into it. And that talk happens within the team, too. There has been plenty of finger pointing this season about Reggie Jackson's shot selection and how the ball moves when he's on the court. Maybe this is part of a breakthrough moment for him to be better. I'm a little surprised this one shot of all Reggie Jackson's bad shots throughout the year has taken on sort of this, outsized importance where people are really focusing in on this one shot. But there is a lot of attention being paid on this shot, including by Reggie Jackson, like to text Stan Van Gundy about this specific shot. Van Gundy was obviously asked about this specific shot. This one is resonating a little more, and so we are going to discuss it. Let's go a little deeper into the hot hand. There have been studies that say the hot hand doesn't exist. I don't think that's exactly true. What the studies have shown, by the way, I'm still getting used to doing podcasts. When I said that the hot hand doesn't exist, I was making air quotes. I realize none of you saw that. There have been studies that have shown, air quotes, that the hot hand doesn't exist, air quotes. I don't think that's exactly what the studies have said, though. What they've shown is that the hot hand doesn't exist to the degree that players think it exists. That when a player makes a shot and shoots again on the next possession, he's less likely to make it than what an average possession or his average shot would have produced. And there's different ways of slicing that, but they've all pretty much shown the same thing. That doesn't mean the hot hand doesn't exist. It just means that it doesn't exist to the degree that players believe it does. And players should become aware of that. They should learn that shooting just because you made a shot on the possession before, you're probably going to be gunning too hard for your shot. When you gun too hard for your shot, it's too likely you end up with a bad shot. So players need to learn this and grow from that. However, I am a believer that in some games, players are more likely to make shots than others. Now, from the outside, we might not always know what those games are. From the inside, players might not always know what those games are. And just because a player has made a high percentage of shots earlier in the game, that might not be one of those games. But that's probably the best indicator we have. Why are players more likely to make shots in some games than others? For similar reasons to why you're more productive at work some days than others. You got a good night's sleep the night before. You're feeling good because you just had a nice break. Your personal life is going well. Maybe for some people, it's because your personal life is going poorly and that's when you focus in on basketball or your job the most. You know, everybody's a little different with this. I think sleep is the big one, the big common denominator for a lot of players, that if you're well-rested and have eaten well and done all those things to get your mind and body right, you are more likely to have a good game. And how can we on the outside and even on the inside, how can that be assessed when that's happening? When a player is making more shots than usual. On the same token, the flip side, you sleep poorly, you eat poorly, you come out and you're 2 for 9, maybe you're not more likely to miss that next shot. Maybe you've just happened to have had bad luck. But maybe there's something going on in that game during that day for you where your shots are less likely to fall. Reggie Jackson was shooting well against the Celtics. Maybe he was a little bit more likely than an average game to make a shot. There are a lot of factors there that I cannot see, that we cannot see. Some of them Reggie Jackson can see, some of them he can't. He needs to identify those, and I have no idea whether he's doing a good job of identifying them or not. But he felt like that was a good shot for him in the moment. I think that means something. It doesn't mean everything. It means something. Okay, two more things I want to get to today. Number one, DeMarcus Cousins will be suspended against the Pistons tomorrow. Pistons host the Trailblazers tonight first. That's the first priority. Trailblazers, okay team. Haven't really found their way this season, but have a decent amount of talent. Have Damian Lillard, have CJ McCollum. They've tinkered with their lineup a little bit. Maybe gotten a little more balance with their starting lineup, with their bench. Their defense hasn't been good. This is one, hopefully, the Pistons can win. Playing at home against a team like this, you don't want them to get on track against you. But the Pelicans tomorrow, definitely not on track. They have not won since the All-Star break, since they traded for DeMarcus Cousins, in part because they just weren't that good of a team before. Cousins wasn't magically going to change that overnight. They're still working through that fit. They won't be working through that fit, though, with Anthony Davis and Boogie against the Pistons. Cousins is suspended for too many technical fouls again. You get suspended automatically for 16 technical fouls, then every other technical foul after that. Nobody had gotten suspended once under this rule this quickly by this point in the season. You know, it's not even March. DeMarcus Cousins has already done it twice. He's on technical foul number 18. This is basically the Rasheed Wallace rule.
she'd got suspended for this back in the day. He would have been suspended who knows how many times. 1 year he got 40-some technicals. This rule, the 16-18-20 suspension rule, this was because of Sheed, because he got 40-some techs in a year, and it was just absurd. That was back when he was with the Trailblazers, before he was with the Pistons. He did get suspended with the Pistons once this rule came in. Don't know how many times Sheed would have gotten suspended that year he was in Portland, just because if this rule were in place, maybe that would have changed his behavior. The idea was to change behavior, not so much to just let players get as many techs and punish them more. All right, last thing I want to talk about today. We went long on the Richard Hamilton jersey retirement yesterday. One more point I wanted to make about Richard Hamilton and why I enjoyed that ceremony so much. Of those five starters on the 04 championship team, Rip sort of stood alone as someone who was so publicly joyful. Chauncey Billups, Tayshaun Prince, they kind of carried themselves with a very steady approach. That's just who they were. They're very cool, calm, and collected. Rasheed Wallace, Ben Wallace, they both had chips on their shoulder where they wouldn't let their guard down, especially Sheed. And Ben, too. I mean, they just often wouldn't let their guard down publicly. Rip would. You saw some of that the other night with how he cried at different times throughout that ceremony. And you just saw it throughout his playing career, how happy he looked when things were going well, especially in his post-game interviews. He was always so bright publicly, and that carried over into the ceremony. So that's why this one was especially joyful to watch. I didn't think his number should have been retired. You can listen to yesterday's podcast for more on that. You can go back to the podcast when it came out that the Pistons would retire his number for more on that. But I enjoyed that it happened. I enjoyed it for Rip. I'm happy for Rip because he brought so much joy to Pistons fans by being himself, by putting that out there, by putting that side of himself out there, by not keeping it private and being this joyful person. Sometimes we saw that emotional side of it maybe take a negative at the end. His last couple years with the Pistons got a little ugly. Because he was so outwardly emotional about some things, he couldn't really keep some things that maybe he should have kept close to the vest. So there were downsides to it. But at the upside, it was great. It was great to have a player around who was so outwardly enthusiastic. The Pistons were very fortunate to have him. Pistons fans were fortunate to watch him. And I was very glad to see his number go up in the rafters, even if I disagreed with it. The joy of that moment topped the rest of it. We'll have more on the Trailblazers-Pistons game tomorrow. We'll look ahead a little more to that Pistons-Pelican game. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audioboom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Thanks for listening.